The following is a presentation of the Town of North Hempstead's Project Independence and WCWP. Welcome to Project Independence and You.
Hi there, and welcome indeed to Project Independence and You. This is Evelyn Roth, your host. Project Independence, as our listeners know, is the Aging in Place initiative of the Town of North Hempstead. And by that we mean we provide programs and services designed to enable the older residents of our community, those who are age 60 and over, to remain in their own homes as they grow older with maximum independence and good health. And we do this in a variety of ways by providing transportation, for instance. We get to be a certain age. Sometimes we have to give up the keys to the car, and that is also symbolic of, for many people, of a loss of independence. Sometimes we don't like to drive in bad weather, drive at night, but we have to get the shopping done. We've got to get to the medical appointments. And so Project Independence provides transportation services to our members and anyone who's age 60 or over and is a resident of the Town of North Hempstead is eligible. You can find out more about any of the services by calling 311 inside the Town of North Hempstead or 869-6311 outside of the town. Other services provided include minor home repairs, social work supports, community nursing services. We have volunteer opportunities. We do a lot of information and referral. We have a wonderful resource center at our headquarters in Roslyn Heights. And we do a lot of community education, a lot of what we call health chats at various locations around the community on the whole range of issues of interest to the aging residents of the community. Today, on today's show, we're going to be talking about a few of those areas of interest: diabetes, education, wound care services, and we'll be continuing our series of interviews with veterans for the Oral History Project that we're doing in conjunction with WCWP 88.1 FM, where this show can be heard every Friday morning from 10 a.m. to noon. Each week, we enjoy the company of a guest host who is usually a Project Independence member from the Town of North Hempstead. And today, our guest host is Carol Steiner. Welcome, Carol.
Hello, Evelyn.
It's so good to have you with us.
And it's a pleasure to be here.
Now, Carol was someone who is very interested in the issue of pedestrian safety, and she contacted us. Excuse me, folks, and said, we must talk about pedestrian safety on the radio show. We must have an article about pedestrian safety in the newsletter. We love that kind of input from our members. And of course, we have done just that.
You didn't do just one show. You did two radio shows on pedestrian safety.
Right. And in this current issue of the Project Independence Pioneer newsletter, there's an article about pedestrian safety by our very own expert, Carol Steiner. And which reminds me, folks, if you haven't received your copy of the Pioneer newsletter, which is just chock full of terrific information, please call 311 and let us know. We want to make sure that we have every household that should be getting that newsletter on our mailing list. Now, get your pencils and your paper out because you're going to want to make a lot of notes throughout the show. Our first guest today is Lynn Shimone, and Lynn is a certified diabetes educator, and she is director of the Diabetes Education Center at Winthrop University Hospital. We all know, of course, that diabetes is a condition that affects many, many people, especially as we grow older. So welcome to the show, Lynn, and tell us a little bit about how you got into this field.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here on this program that caters to the needs of our older individuals in the town. I have diabetes in my family. My mother has diabetes, and other relatives on her side. And as my siblings are aging, they're beginning to develop pre-diabetes. So it's
pre-diabetes. Okay, you'll tell us what that
is. We'll be talking about that. Right, that's a very hot topic now.
Okay.
And I've been in diabetes education over 30 years and working with Winthrop Hospital, and we happen to have the first diabetes education center in New York State, the first American Diabetes Association recognized program. We're in existence 32 years.
Yeah, so, I noticed that.
So that's it's quite a long time.
Yeah.
So
You definitely couldn't have been there the whole time, Lynn. Okay, we wouldn't have to talk about your age. but you certainly don't look like you could have been there for 32 years. So tell us what
happens.
I'm coming
back next week.
Okay. This is how to make friends, folks. Lynn, tell us what happens there. What happens at the center at Winthrop?
So we have education services available to individuals who have diabetes or pre-diabetes, and what we can offer one-on-one individual counseling either with a nurse or a dietitian to help people learn more about how to take care of their own diabetes, self-manage their own condition. We also offer group education classes, and all these programs are catered to the person, to their own specific individual needs, and really it's to teach them, give them the knowledge that they need and the skills that they need to manage their condition. We work in conjunction with the patient's physician. So, you know, we basically give you the information and we send information back to the physician. We don't take over the medical management or anything
okay.
like that. We're helping you to understand why your doctor is recommending certain medications. We're helping you with a food plan, etc.
Right. So, Lynn, you mentioned that diabetes is in your family. Is this a disease that does run in families?
Absolutely. Diabetes has type 2 diabetes has a very strong genetic component, and pre-diabetes as well. And pre-diabetes is the precursor or comes before type 2 diabetes.
Now, how do you define pre-diabetes?
So basically, we look at blood tests. So everyone should be going annually to their physician for a checkup, and the doctor will do a fasting blood sugar. And when we see that fasting blood sugar creep over 100 or above, if it's between 100 and 124, that's considered pre-diabetes. Mm-hmm. And what we know is that something is brewing in people for many years before they actually get the diagnosis of diabetes. So for about 10 years before they're finally diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, something has been starting to happen with their blood sugar. And from very large-scale research studies, we know that if we intervene in the pre-diabetes period with lifestyle modifications, a healthy way of eating, perhaps weight loss if that's indicated, and a nice exercise, nothing crazy, but just, you know, 150 minutes of physical activity a week, that we can prevent the type 2 diabetes or slow down the progression to it.
So you can actually take a person who's considered pre-diabetic and help them change their lifestyle and prevent them ever becoming fully diabetic.
Absolutely. And to that end, we have a pre-diabetes program that we established. And that program, we've had it in existence a few years, and it was able to be started thanks to a grant from the Lions Club. Because, as you know, most insurance companies do not pay for preventive medicine.
Right.
So,
unfortunately.
And this is a very, very important area for us to intervene for the health of our population. So we're very thankful to them to help us.
I was so interested when I read that you do have a program for people with pre-diabetes. One reason being that my doctor has been telling me for 10 years, every time I see him, oh, you know, you're pre-diabetes, you're going to get diabetes someday. And I was like, thank you for that piece of good news. But I would be interested if you could perhaps elaborate on how referrals typically come to this program. Because I never really knew there was someone I should go and talk to about this.
So your doctor never said to you, here are some things you can do to forestall.
No, it was kind of, I have bad news for you, and I'm giving you a lot of
deal
advance
with it,
notice.
Right. Okay, well, after the show, Carol, we're going to talk a little bit about your doctor, but go ahead.
Well, actually, he did a good thing for you in giving you the news, but We try to market our program, obviously, in many different places. But a person, anyone listening to this radio program, could self-refer to our program. So if you have heard something from your doctor and you would like to get more information, you can call us at 663-2350 and you can schedule an appointment. We will then, you know, work with you and your physician to find out with your lab work exactly, you know, what your diagnosis and your numbers are.
And this might be a good place to mention, folks, that if you would like to talk to Lynn, if you have a question for Lynn now, while she's on the show with us live, you can call us at 516-299-2030. That's 299-2030, and ask your question, and Lynn will be happy to respond. So, Lynn, you want to give that number, your number again, please?
Sure, 516-663-2350, and we're located in Mineola.
Okay.
We have easy access to our office.
Pretty centrally located for our people in our town.
I actually think Winthrop Hospital is right near the train station.
Absolutely.
Isn't it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So anyone who has access to the Long Island Railroad.
There's a major bus station there also.
Right. Mm-hmm. There is.
Okay. Now, you did mention in passing type 2. Diabetes. Let's talk a little bit about type 1 and type 2 and the difference.
Right. Yeah, let's just go back for a moment. So, in the United States, we have quite a lot of diabetes in general. The majority of the people, more than 80%, have the type 2, and the remaining percent have type 1. In type 1 diabetes, this is where the body produces little to no insulin. Those people need to take insulin injections. Commonly, people associate this with children. In type 1 diabetes used to be called juvenile diabetes, but older people can still have type 1 diabetes, so they didn't like to be told they have juvenile diabetes. So,
I mean, it's something that can happen once you're an adult. It can suddenly develop type 1 diabetes.
Some people do develop it later, a little bit later in life. Yeah. And this is not as genetically driven. Type 2, which is, 80 to 90% of the people with diabetes, this is very strongly genetically driven.
Okay, and that's where you're producing some?
And in type 2 diabetes, the person does make insulin. Unfortunately, the insulin is not working as efficiently as it should. So this is a condition we call insulin resistance. So we have the insulin, it's just not able to get the job done. And that's essentially what's happening in pre-diabetes, is this whole insulin resistant condition is starting. And, if we... there are many factors that aggravate insulin resistance. For example, being sedentary, not being physically active, and maybe gaining a few pounds. So if we can intervene to help people to lose some weight, not a lot of weight, just 7% of their body weight, and be a little bit more physically active, 150 minutes a week, just walking is great.
Two and a half hours.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it doesn't have to be done 30 minutes all at one time. That could be broken up, especially people that, tend to be a little older, may have arthritis, they may have mobility issues, it might be harder to move around. But just, we always say, keep moving. So these are some very simple lifestyle changes people can take that can help to treat the insulin resistance.
Okay, we're talking with Lynn Shimon, who is the director of the Diabetes Education Center at Winthrop Hospital. We're learning a lot about diabetes, which is a very common affliction for many of our older residents, and we're going to be learning more in the next segment, so stay tuned to Project Independence and you.
Secure your place in LIU Post's Fall 2012 class and find out how good you really are. Attend.
Hi there. Welcome back to Project Independence and You. This is Evelyn Roth, your host. And my co-host today is Carol Steiner, who's a Project Independence member from the town of North Hempstead. Carol, how's it going?
It's going well.
Are you enjoying?
I am. You know, I had a lot of nervousness about being on radio.
Yes.
It's something I never did before. But it helped that I was able to visit the studio a couple weeks ago. You know, sit in the chair, say hello to Chris. And I really am enjoying myself.
Okay. Carol is referring to Chris, our engineer and our boss. He's the guy who makes the program roll along. And as Carol points out, being a co-host on Project Independence and You is a lot of fun, and it is not difficult, and you need have no prior radio experience. What you need is a healthy interest in people and some curiosity about the issues that we deal with. And of course, we prefer if you are somewhat articulate. And
I'm trying.
You're doing great, Carol. You can be a co-host. So if you're interested, if you're thinking about a second or third career in radio, give us a call at 311 or 869-6311. And what happens is we'll invite you down to the show. You will observe one show. You'll see how the host and co-host and guest relationship works. And if you feel that you'd like to give it a try, then we'll schedule you to be a co-host. And as Carol said, it is a lot of fun. So give us a call if you are interested in co-hosting Project Independence and You, or perhaps you want to be a guest on the show if you have some information on a topic of interest to our listeners who are, for the most part, age 60 and over. And now I'd like to welcome back our first guest, Lynn Shimone, who is the Director of Diabetes Education Center at Winthrop University Hospital, right here in the town of North Hempstead. Lynn, welcome back.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
We've been learning, as we always do. We always learn stuff on Project Independence and You. And today we're learning a little bit about diabetes. You, of course, run the education center. And I noticed in your material, one of the things that you talk about is dieting out with diabetes and cooking courses.
Tell us
about that.
So what we find,
like fun.
what we find is that the part of taking care of diabetes that people struggle with the most is the food. We all love to eat, and when you come to the center, whether you come for an individual program or the group program, you will get an individualized meal plan tailored to your own specific dietary needs, your medical conditions, your food preferences. We just don't give you a sheet of paper that says, mm-hmm. choose one from column A and one from column B. Mm-hmm. It's all personalized to you. With that said, and all the education that you get, people need refreshers from time to time. They need support to keep them on track to managing their blood sugars. And since people love to eat, and we would constantly hear from people who come through our program that they struggle with, you know, knowing how to make food choices when they go out, we decided to start the Dining Out with Diabetes series about 10 years ago, I guess. And that's a fun program. We go into different restaurants, types of restaurants. We actually have a meal at the restaurant. And
interesting.
It is.
Yes.
It's a lot of fun.
Taking education out of the classroom and into a real-life situation.
You hit the nail on the head, and that's how we learn the best. So we actually, dietitians actually go in and they meet with the chefs. They really know what goes into the food preparation. They know the nutritional value of the food. And then we go there and we have a meal, and we don't tell people what to eat, but we actually educate them as to this is what's in the food, perhaps these are the best choices, and then we eat a meal together. So not only are they learning about that type of food, they're also having the camaraderie of other people who have diabetes as well. So it's a very, very fun evening. And we've gone to Chinese, Japanese, Greek, Old Country Buffet. That was a tough one. We've been to...
I imagine it's Italian restaurants. They are the toughest for me.
Yes.
I think... It may be because of the smells of the food that you really love.
And the portions.
Right. Well, when you get down to that, yeah.
So we've done the Italian program many, many times. Italian and Chinese are our two most requested programs.
Mm-hmm.
So
what types of things do you order there if you have diabetes, say in a Chinese restaurant? Or do you just ask them to prepare the food without certain elements?
You know, interestingly enough... the most important issue when eating out anywhere, whether it be fast food or whether it be a nice restaurant, is that the portions are just too large.
Mm-hmm.
So much of our education centers on, you know, what's an appropriate portion and, you know, how do you pick the lower fat, lower calorie menu item. And we show people how to read the menus for that.
Mm-hmm. But it's really a lot about portion control.
Absolutely. In a typical Italian restaurant, you know, or even in a Chinese restaurant, the starch portion is going to be 3 or 4 times, you know, really what's recommended for someone generally. And that's just the starch portion. And then, you know, we have other places where carbohydrates come into our meal plan.
So you should be leaving these restaurants with a great big bag of food to take home. Right?
You save money.
Right. I also noticed that you have programs for people with special language needs.
Yes, so we have an interpretation system, the Sericom phone system. If anyone comes in and they speak another language, we're able to get a live interpreter on the phone.
Huh.
Yes.
Okay.
And,
I'm very impressed with the degree to which you've thought through what the clients might need, you know, in terms of speaking their language, in terms of prevention.
It's very important to meet a person where they're at.
I think you're
so
right.
So first
about
we
that.
Have to be able to communicate. And we our educators, they're all certified diabetes educators, and they do a very intensive interview of the person to really understand them, their lifestyle, their medical conditions, and really to tap into asking them what they'd like to know, what they'd like to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And we go from there.
Carol, you asked Lynn what I thought was an interesting question during the break, and that is, what are the symptoms of diabetes? How would you know?
Yes.
If it's brewing.
I think with a lot of conditions, it is very important to identify them early so you can prevent bodily damage.
Some symptoms of high blood sugar would be increased thirst, increased urination. A person might have an itch on their skin. They might develop a urinary tract infection, something like that. But more scary is that often, especially in type 2 diabetes, there are no symptoms. The person might feel a little tired, but you know what? We all feel a little tired. We chalk it up to something else. Oh, I had a busy day, or I didn't sleep well, something like that. So quite commonly in type 2 diabetes, people walk around with high sugars and they don't even really realize it.
That is scary.
There are a lot of people in the country who have undiagnosed diabetes.
So the important thing is to get that blood test on a regular basis. How often should we be? Is this an annual thing?
Every person should be going to their doctor annually for a physical, and a routine part of a physical is a blood sugar check. It's called a glucose.
Right.
And a fasting.
But that's part of the regular blood test.
Correct.
It's not necessarily the... if they see
it's
a problem,
special.
Then they would go ahead and do the glucose tolerance.
Well, there's another test that physicians are using now. It's called a hemoglobin A1C, glycosylated hemoglobin A1C. It's the same test. And that's a very great test because it gives the doctor an idea of what your average blood sugar has been over the previous 3 months, whereas the glucose test is just that moment in time. The A1C test, it gives you more of an indicator of the previous 3 months.
So if you go in for your annual checkup, you have your blood tests, your glucose level is high, what would be the next step?
Well, your physician would take your whole medical history into account. Again, if you end up with a fasting blood sugar between 100 and 124, that's pre-diabetes, and he may repeat the test just to make sure there was no lab error or something like that. But then, you know, he would be advising you to make these healthy lifestyle changes and hopefully telling you to come to our pre-diabetes program.
So once it goes above 124, then it's diabetes?
Yes, 125 or higher is officially diabetes.
Okay.
And that, of course, the doctor would verify again with another test. That's a different type of intervention at that point in time. You know, he might recommend diet control to you. He'll look at the whole picture. He may need to, you know, start a medication. And the good news today in diabetes is no one ever wants to take medicine. We hear that from people all the time.
Right.
But we do have many different types of medicines available to help people.
But the picture that I have of the person with diabetes is sticking the needle in the finger, taking the levels, trying to get the levels steady, and of course taking insulin. And is that how it works with chronic diabetes still?
Well, in type 2 diabetes, we have today many more pills, oral medications that if they're needed, a doctor can choose from. And doctors are doing combination therapies where, you know, a person might be on a couple of different types of oral agents to help control their sugar. The person may check their blood sugar, you know, periodically just to see how things are going. Sometimes people with type 2 do end up on insulin, but that's not a definite. That's, you know, each person's case is very individual. The person with type 1 would be on insulin, would need to check their blood sugar, you know, more often. But the good news there is that it's not like the old days where people used to boil syringes. We have insulin pens that look very much like the pens you have sitting here on your table. Everything's much easier.
Okay. Believe it or not, Lynn Shimone, Director of Diabetes Education at Winthrop University Hospital. Our time is up for today, but we would certainly like to have you come back because I feel that we've only scratched the surface.
I do too.
Here on the subject of diabetes, what we have learned is that annual blood check is critical, especially as we get older. And we certainly recommend that everyone do that. And our next guest is going to be Dr. Harold Bram. Today seems to be Winthrop University Hospital Day, and he's in charge of wound care at the hospital. And that, of course, is also related to the topic of diabetes.
Absolutely.
So we thank you, Lynn. We hope you will come back. This is Project Independence, and you, please stay tuned.
Thank you.
Hi there, welcome back to Project Independence and You. This is Evelyn Roth, your host. My co-host today is Project Independence member Carol Steiner, who is from the town of North Hempstead. Hey, Carol, welcome back.
Yes, nice to be here, Evelyn.
Still having a good time?
I am.
Good.
I am. I'm having a good time and I'm learning a lot.
Okay. If you're interested in being a co-host on Project Independence and You, and if you're a town of North Hempstead resident age 60 and over and you have a healthy curiosity about the topics that we talk about, give us a call at 311 inside of the town or 869-6311 if you live outside the town of North Hempstead. If you want to talk with us or any of our guests during the show, you can do that by calling live 516-299-2030. That's 299-2030. Our next guest is going to be talking about some very interesting issues that we as aging residents are concerned about. He's Dr. Harold Bram, and he is Chief of the Division of Wound Healing and Regenerative Medicine at Winthrop University Hospital. Welcome, Dr. Bram.
Thank you.
I know that your topic is also very related to the subject that we were discussing earlier with Lynn Shimone, and that is diabetes. How did you get into this particular specialty, Dr. Bram?
Well, as a general surgeon, often you take off time during your training to do research, and I did what turned out to be 5 years with a famed professor at Harvard studying cancer growth, angiogenesis. I hated wounds, as all good surgeons do, mm-hmm. because you don't get better right away. Mm-hmm. But I started to study them as we studied ways of treating tumors, blocking blood vessels. We started studying how they would affect skin. And I was amazed that the human body can heal every wound. And I started in 1998 my career in academics saying the hypothesis that every patient could get better. And that's how I started studying it, from animals and cells to patients.
Why is it that sometimes wounds don't heal?
There are 9 reasons. But only 9.
Okay.
Only 9.
Okay. We've only got half an hour.
So, for example, diabetes, pressure, lack of blood supply, bad veins, and infection. Everybody knows somebody with one of those reasons. One of those reasons. Uh-huh. And when that happens, your body gets a signal, stop, for whatever reason. And that they literally, you stop healing. Mm.
I want to say, in preparing for today's show, it was a complete surprise to me that there are people who have wounds that don't heal here in New York. I knew that this happened in war zones in other countries, but apparently it's a very it's a problem that happens frequently, and I was so impressed that there are people like you who have devoted your professional lives to looking at a topic that creates intense squeamishness, I think, in a lot of us.
Well, it's, blessed truly by God to be able to study it and treat it, but it actually affects 5 million people. Probably 10% of the people who are in the hospital more than a week have some sort of wound contributing to it. Mm. The body is tightly regulated. It's miraculous. And when things happen like diabetes or like bad veins or arteries, it stops. And it's a life or death if you have that open hole.
What do you do?
It's very simple. You
really?
Take out the... Yeah, absolutely. We make things more complicated because, as Carol said, you don't... people don't know about it. So, and especially older persons, they don't want to bother anybody. My mother doesn't want to tell anybody when something is wrong. So
that's very true. Mm-hmm.
And very mm-hmm. unfortunate. Our parents are the people who built this country, built our life. When they need it the most, they don't ask. So they tend to get bigger and they become affected, and then often it's too late. It's just a terrible, terrible problem to have.
So, how do you know that you've got, or that your parent has got a wound that's becoming a problem?
You have is there a break in the skin? Period. That's it. Nothing more than that. That's all you have to do.
And that's a question I don't think any of us think of asking our parents. Quite honestly.
We have to.
Are you eating okay? How are you sleeping? Are you getting out but not? Do you have a break in the skin?
Well, when we were little, they'd say, do you have a sunburn or how are you doing? And they would always be putting a cream on. We need to treat our parents the exact same way, with that tenderness and kindness.
So, Doc, you said it was easy to treat a wound. How do you do it?
Simple. You create a moist environment, you use a cream, and you have to choose the right one.
And tell us which is the
right
one.
That's your job,
once
right?
We have you here.
Well, it depends. If it's a person with diabetes, they might use a protein gel called Regranex. Mm-hmm. If it's a vein ulcer, you might use one called Diodosorb that kills the bacteria, like the old Mercuricone, but medicated. Everything today is pure evidence-based medicine, and it's none of these hokey pokey stuff, and that's a problem.
Well, we're not suggesting that people do this themselves. We're suggesting that if your older relative or you have a wound that's not healing in health,
that's the key. You see,
yes,
Evelyn, don't wait till it's not healing, because if it's just a little nothing, get the right cream on it. But maybe wait a week, but not more.
Not longer than a week. And then see the doctor.
Absolutely. And go see a wound specialist. New York has tons of them.
One of the things that was interesting to me is that it seems that there are people who are getting treated by their regular doctor. Maybe they cut themselves badly in the kitchen and he puts on a bandage or a gauze pad or whatever, and who then don't heal properly and need more specialized care. And I'm wondering who makes the call when it's time to go for more specialized care. Is that something that doctors would do automatically?
Doctors aren't trained in this. Okay. It's easy. Again, life is easy. It's easy. Doctors aren't trained in this. This is not something that people who come into my research program aren't want to go into plastic surgery. They don't want to go into wound healing. It's not something. It's certainly not glamorous.
Who used to say, "Doc, for you it's easy, for me it's difficult"? Some television character. It's not so easy. I mean, people really have to understand step by step what they need to do.
And if it's in their leg, or if they have a bed sore, or if they have a family member in a nursing home or at home, or a person with diabetes, or in their foot, or any person with a cut in their leg, I'm talking about within a week, get there. One paper we published, it was 8 years before they presented. You know, it's...
Okay, so if you have this kind of a wound and it doesn't heal within a week, go see your doctor. And...
go see a wound doctor. Your doctor may not know it either.
So just take yourself directly to the wound doctor. Very often you need to have, because of insurance requirements today, a referral.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, at least at our center, I was recruited out to Long Island for, this is a mission, it's completely insurance independent. This is really a mission that we could wipe out amputations, wipe out hospitalizations, wipe out death, wipe out suffering, especially in the elderly, disabled, and those with diabetes.
So those folks can just come directly to
Period.
The center.
Absolutely.
And you are located at Winthrop.
That's really awesome.
Yes, and it's a mission. It's a mission.
That's what I felt in reading about the work that you've done, that you have had the courage to look at an area that most of us withdraw from because it's unpleasant. And I'm referring in particular to your commitment to reducing the incidence of limb loss in diabetics. And I think that one of the reasons diabetes makes so many of us feel frightened is that we know stories about people who have lost a limb.
So that doesn't have to happen if people take care of the wounds.
And even a smoker who has what's called peripheral arterial disease, or somebody, you could even have had somebody, a woman, who might have had a baby. So it's not just people with diabetes. I'm just trying to be humorous that it's everybody. And they often get clots that years later turn into vein ulcers or result in a vein ulcer. So anybody who's got a break in their skin, particularly if it's in the pelvic or buttock area, it could be a bed sore. You might have an older parent who is bedbound or who was in an accident, a person with a diabetic, of course a diabetic, God willing, they know to come right away, but especially a diabetic might have a nail problem, a vein problem, or peripheral arterial disease. Listen, you never have to listen to the doctor, but better to at least hear what they have to say.
Yeah. And so you treat these wounds with, what are some of the new things in treatment of wounds?
Well, it's very exciting. We now understand why they don't heal, and we replace it with, in the office, and I never dreamed I'd be saying this, with recombinant special proteins, or...
I'm impressed you can remember those words.
Well, it's 29 years.
Continent special proteins. Okay.
I am a member of ARP, but it is 29 years. And human cells, or human cells, even stem cells. They have stem cells, but these cells are taken from a baby and they come as a product and you apply them. They're called keratinocytes, fibroblasts, or these medicated gels.
Huh. And do you ever use a person's own cells?
We've studied that in the laboratory, but that's never been able to be a successful commercial product, so we don't.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so these, again, are... techniques that involve creams or gels or things
it's called human skin, but it actually comes from one donor. It's manufactured.
And you apply these.
You apply it
to the wounds. So we're not talking surgery or anything like that.
Believe me, after just spending the night in the operating room, and as I will tonight again, I never want somebody to have to progress to that point. It's much better, and actually my partner, Dr. Gorenstein, who's been in this community for many, many years, is actually a virtual genius about doing this in the office and avoiding the surgery.
Yeah.
We never want to go back to somebody having needing surgery.
And, Doc, how often is infection an issue with these wounds that don't heal?
But by the millions. You hear about it all the time. It's all the time. Oh, I had a surgery, or oh, I have an MRSA, or oh, this wound didn't heal. The infections are terrible.
Okay. We're talking with Dr. Harold Brehm, who is the chief of the Division of Wound Healing and Regenerative Medicine at Winthrop University Hospital, about a topic that is very timely and very important, not always the most pleasant thing to think about, but I'm learning a lot, as I think you are too, Carol, about the advances in wound care, and we want to hear more. So please stay tuned, and we will be right back with Dr. Brehm. Hi there, welcome back to Project Independence and You. This is Evelyn Roth, your host, my co-host today, a Project Independence member from the town of North Hempstead, Carol Steiner. Welcome back, Carol.
Yes,
still
nice
having
to
fun.
Be here, Evelyn.
Okay.
I am. I'm going to offer to fill in again, you know,
okay.
if you're shorthanded.
You're doing a great job.
Thank you.
Call us if you would like to be a Project Independence co-host. You can call 311 within the town of North Hempstead or 869-6311 outside of the town. All you need is an interest in people and issues, and you don't need any radio experience. If you want to talk with Carol or myself or our guest, Dr. Harold Brehm, you can call us now direct at 516-299-2030. Dr. Harold Brehm is the chief of the Division of Wound Healing and Regenerative Medicine at Winthrop University Hospital, and we're talking with him about wound care, especially as it affects seniors, and we've learned that all wounds or most wounds can be healed, and the key is to catch it in time, to not wait a month if you have a wound that is not healing. If it doesn't heal within a week, go see Dr. Brehm or his colleagues at the Wound Care Division of Winthrop, or at very least, go see your doctor and say, do you think I need to see a wound care specialist? Dr. Brehm, we've heard a lot and read about something that to me is almost like science fiction, putting someone in a hyperbaric chamber. What's that all about?
Dr. Gorenstein's perfected this modeling, but what it really means is you sit in a chamber, you lie down, you watch a movie, and your oxygen that you inhale is very high. Several times normal, and it at a certain pressure, and that stimulates healing, plain and simple.
So that you would go for a treatment, and how long would you?
You go every day. You go in for 90 minutes,
uh-huh.
And it's only people who have very severe ulcers that benefit from it.
This is
deep diabetic foot ulcers, or people who don't have good blood supply, or long-time bone infection.
Ulcers on the skin you're talking about?
Well, ulcers that start on the skin, but then go deep.
Yeah.
And you don't need it to go through this if it's just a routine ulcer.
Right.
We talked about how to heal those.
And this is a successful treatment in most cases?
It's a very successful treatment if done with the other things, the other advanced therapies. If done with the wound being cleaned, if by itself, unfortunately, it won't do anything.
Uh-huh.
There's no magic here.
Okay. Because it seems so kind of...
It is exciting. It is. And I used to be very skeptical till we learned in the field, nothing that I did, but the field learned when it works and when it doesn't. And we know exactly now when it's helpful. It really makes a big difference if you do it with these recombinant proteins and these cells and good wound care and decreasing pressure in that area.
Part of a comprehensive treatment approach.
Exactly.
And it sounds like a lot of people from different specialties have made contributions to this.
Well, that's what I'm excited, what I was excited when I was recruited to Winthrop is that they already had, I think, national or world-class people doing it, this amazing plastic surgeon and these terrific vascular surgeon. And these are people who are, I'm talking about people who really do this as a big part of their job, who are very passionate over many years developing these techniques. And now we do it together.
Doc, we were talking during the break about people, especially older people, who are hospitalized for some other condition and who are very concerned and worried about their health, and they have a wound, and maybe they're not aware that this is an issue. I mean, is this something that hospitals regularly check their patients for?
Well, let's just say this. The answer is yes, they do check, but it's an evolving field. And I think your typical patient who might come in with a pneumonia or kidney transplant, anything, if they develop a wound, they're going to be defeated. They're going to feel bad. And they're not going to say, oh my gosh, let's go do something about this, because it's always coming upon another problem.
Mm.
And that's why I love, Evelyn, what you're talking about, Project Independence, about advocating for yourself or advocating for a family member. You can get better no matter how bad or deep. It's going to get you, so you better get on top of it.
Mm, okay. And do you also do hospital work? You're at the wound care center?
Yeah, I mean, most of what I do is in the hospital.
Uh-huh.
Of course, I'm in the center, but we have it's the only place, again, I know of in the country that we have three other doctors who are full-time wound doctors. That's really cool.
Yeah.
So
it is.
So I'm able to be in the hospital, and unfortunately, a lot of my work and a lot of my research is on the most severe ulcers. So you never want to see me. But I
okay. At least not in the hospital, Dr.
Right.
Okay, and the people coming to the center at Winthrop, are they for the most part older folks?
That's why I told you, even if you had a baby. In other words, it's everybody. It could be somebody who had a clot in their leg, they might have been on a plane ride,
like
or they had
Mariano Rivera.
Exactly.
You know who Mariano Rivera is,
sure.
Right? And he had a clot in his leg, and he's a relatively young man and a well-conditioned athlete.
Right, but he was lying in bed for a period of time, which, you know, could happen to anybody. And so many famous people died of these embolus. We all know you walk around on a plane type thing, but people get clots all the time, and then their veins don't flow back to the heart, and then the blood leaks out. The point being, Evelyn, people get wounds at young ages. People get wounds when they had from chemotherapy. People get it from radiation. People get it from steroids. Certain medications do it. It is common.
Mm-hmm.
Even an infected dog bite could do it.
Wow. Okay. Well, is there anything that we haven't covered, Dr. Brehm? Anything really new and coming down the pike in wound care?
Yeah, I think using your own cells is extremely exciting. That is definitely going to be a big part of it. You clearly are
hitting...
We're not
talking about your telephone now. We're talking about...
Right. Taking your own cells to repair yourself is your own cells, your own stem cells that are in your own body is extremely exciting. Some of these recombinant proteins are getting better.
So how far are we from being able to use your own cells to cure a wound?
We're there. Uh-huh. It's being proved in studies right now.
Wow.
In fact, we're about to launch a major study of taking your own blood, spitting down your cells. And it's used in other countries. Luckily, in this country, we have to go through a lot of regs to see if it really works.
Okay.
That's good to know, something to look forward to in the area of wound care. Yes.
Now, God willing, if everybody follows advice of early treatment, halting progression, looking, asking, is my skin intact? We'll never see another patient in the hospital again.
Well, let's close on that note and that hope. We've been talking with Dr. Harold Brehm, who is chief of the Division of Wound Healing and Regenerative Medicine at Winthrop University Hospital. We've been learning about wound care, especially as it affects seniors and people with diabetes. And the news seems to be very encouraging and very good. We've got wonderful new treatments, and there are more wonderful new treatments coming down the pike. If you want to reach the Wound Care Center at Winthrop, you can call 516-663-8498. And if you didn't have your pencil ready, 311 is an easy number to remember. Just call us at 311 and we will put you in touch with the Wound Care Center. I think the most important thing that we were told by Dr. Brehm is if you have a wound that hasn't healed in a week, go to the doctor. You can go to the Wound Care Center or you can go to your regular physician and ask if you need to see a specialist. Don't let it wait. Don't let it fester, because it can get you in some serious trouble. Dr. Brehm, thank you. Carol, thank you. Please stay tuned, because I'll be back with the introduction to the final segment of the Lux Radio Theater production of The 39 Steps. We'll be right back. Hi there. Welcome back to Project Independence and You. This is Evelyn Roth, your host. My co-host today has been Carol Steiner, a Project Independence member from the town of North Hempstead. Coming up is the third and final part of the Lux Radio Theater 1937 production of The 39 Steps from a novel by John Buchan, starring Robert Montgomery as Richard Hannay and Ida Lupino as Pamela Stewart, the roles played by Robert Donat and Madeline Carroll in Alfred Hitchcock's classic 1935 film version. The story begins in a London music hall at a performance by Mr. Memory, demonstrating his legendary photographic recall. From there, it quickly moves to a railroad train bound for Scotland, where Hannay hopes to foil a plot to steal vital British military secrets. He's also running from the police, who believe he murdered the female spy who involved him in the plot, after their chance meeting at the music hall. On the train, Hannay meets Pamela, who at first tries to turn him over to the police. Hannay jumps from the train and tracks down the mysterious evil professor, identified because he is missing part of one finger on his right hand. Obviously, he did not take care of that wound. Hannay, after an attempt on his life by the professor and another escape, meets up with Pamela again on a country road. Now being chased by the police and the professor's henchmen, Richard and Pamela, find shelter at a local inn, posing as a married couple. They, of course, hide the fact that they've been handcuffed together by the bad guys. Ah, the clever, sexy banter before the fireplace in the cozy inn. It is now nighttime, and a car is approaching the inn. Listen to the final segment of the 39 Steps.
Once again, the 39 Steps, starring Robert Montgomery and Ida Lupino, with Isabel Jewell and Gene Lockhart. It's early the following morning. Richard Hannay stirs restlessly in the armchair and rubs his eyes sleepily. Suddenly, he jumps from the chair and stands in the middle of the room, staring down at the handcuffs which are dangling from his wrist. Pamela Stewart, on the other side of the room, smiles cheerily.
Good morning, Mr. Hawkinson. Looking rather dazed this morning.
How did you get free?
Oh, very simple. A little matter of work while you had your nightmares.
I suppose you filed the handcuffs.
No, darling, I picked the lock. I was trying to do the same for you, but the file broke.
Say, what's wrong with you?
Oh, nothing that I know of. Oh, you mean my shoes. Yes, they're rather large, aren't they? I borrowed them from the innkeeper's wife.
No. It's not the shoes. Why are you being so nice? You don't feel ill or anything, do you?
No, why should I?
Why didn't you leave? You were very anxious, too, if I remember correctly.
Well, something happened last night to convince me you've been telling the truth.
May I ask what earthquake caused your mind to work at last?
When I got free, I went downstairs. That car you said I imagined belonged to our pursuers. They were sitting downstairs when I got there.
Did they see you?
No, I hid behind the counter. But they asked the innkeeper about us.
What did he say?
He said he hadn't seen us. Then they ordered something to eat. And while they were eating, they talked a lot about, about the 39 steps.
39 steps?
Oh, don't ask me what it means, because I don't know.
Anything else?
Well, they said the professor was clearing out of the country.
Then he has got the secret. Did they say how soon he was leaving?
No, but they did say that he was going to London first to pick up someone at a music hall.
39 steps. London music hall. It doesn't make any sense. Which room are these men in?
Oh, they left.
When?
Oh, about 4 or 5 hours ago.
And you let them go after hearing what they said? Oh, you button-headed little idiot, you.
Don't you speak to me like that.
My dear girl, I'm accused of murder. The only way I can clear myself is to expose those spies.
Then why don't you go to Scotland Yard?
What's the use? You said yourself that no one would believe me.
Well, then why don't I go to Scotland Yard?
Why not? They'd listen to you.
Of course they would.
Come on, we'll get the next train for London.
You wish to order now, sir?
No, thank you. I'm waiting for someone.
I beg your pardon, sir. Your face looks familiar. Are you in the cinema?
No, I'm not. Bring me a bottle of ale, will you?
Very good, sir.
Oh, make that two, please.
Yes, miss.
Pamela, sit down.
Did you think I was never coming?
Not exactly, but I was getting nervous waiting. Well, what happened? Did you go to Scotland Yard?
Yes.
Well?
Prepare yourself for a shock.
Why?
They've checked every possible channel. The Air Ministry are positive that no papers are missing that will be of any possible use to spies.
That's incredible. Are you sure?
Well, that's exactly what they said.
I don't know what to make of it.
I think you've been tricked.
Well, certainly is all very bewildering.
Oh, I'm sorry, Richard. Really, I am. Look, I think you better go now.
Go where?
Oh, any place. Leave the country. I'll help you.
You?
Oh, I know it sounds funny, but somehow I couldn't bear the thought of them catching you again.
Why, Pamela?
Oh, I don't know. I guess I've just changed my mind about you, that's all. Of course, you're as vain as a peacock, and I couldn't stand you for any length of time, but you're not so bad.
Well, you're not so bad either. If I weren't in this jam, I'd...
What?
Nothing. Come on, let's get out of here.
No, you better stay. I'll run and get you a ticket for Liverpool. There ought to be a boat train
Pamela.
Soon. Well, what's the matter? What are you staring at?
Look out the window. Do you see that billboard across the street?
Yes. Is there anything strange about it?
A list of acts playing this week at the Palladium. The feature attraction is Mr. Memory.
But I don't understand.
Come on, we're going to get out of here.
Well, where are we going
now? The Palladium.
But why?
I don't know, but we're going just the same. Here are your seats, sir. First two on the aisle. Thank you. Sit down, Pamela.
This is silly. In the first place, the show's almost over. Anyone sees you here? What are you looking for?
Be quiet. I'm just playing a hunch, that's all.
Well, you're playing a fool to ask me.
Ladies and gentlemen, with your kind permission and attention, I now have the honor to present to you one of the most remarkable men in the world. I present Mr. Memory.
Pamela.
What?
Look at that
that right-hand box nearest the stage? You see that small man sitting in front?
Why, yes, it's...
It's the professor himself.
You better get out of here before they see you.
No, sit down, listen.
Every day he commits to memory 50 new facts, and he remembers every one of them. Facts from history, from geography, from newspapers, from scientific textbooks.
Pamela, yes, I've got it. I've got it.
What?
Don't you see the details of this Air Ministry secret have been borrowed, memorized by Mr. Memory, and then put back again before anyone could know?
Well, that's it. Of course it is.
Pardon me, sir, but there's a gentleman who would like to speak to you.
Who, me?
You, Richard Annie.
Well, I...
You're under arrest.
Wait, officer. Listen, there's something here you ought to know.
That'll be, Annie. Come along quietly.
Wait, but you must listen. When that man on the stage comes...
Come on, we don't want any excitement here.
All right, I'll go quietly.
Richard, you're not.
Distance from Montreal, 1,400.
What's the use?
24 miles, am I right? Thank you. Question, please. Do not hesitate. Your question, please.
Wait a minute.
Mr. Memory, what are the 39 steps? Come on, answer up. What are the 39 steps?
The 39 steps. The 39 steps is a secret organization headed by Professor.
Who is he?
That's your man up there in the box. He's the one who shot him.
Stop that man.
Stop that man. Stop him. Stop him.
I want to see Mr. Memory, please. Where's his dressing room?
Number 5, but you can't go in now.
Well, I'm afraid we have to. Detective, have you a pencil and a piece of paper?
Yes.
I want you to write down everything you hear.
But listen here, I...
Do as he tells you, please.
I'm going to prove to you that the man who shot Memory is the murderer of Annabella Smith.
What is it?
We want to see Mr. Memory. How is he, Doctor?
Very bad. Did they get the man who shot him?
Yeah, we got him all right. He hanged for it, too.
Oh.
Mr. Memory. Mr. Memory, can you hear me?
Yes.
Mr. Memory, there's something I'd like you to tell us, please.
Yes.
What was the secret formula you were taking abroad?
Will it be all right, my telling you? It was a big job learning it. The biggest I've ever tackled. I don't want to throw it away, sir.
It will be quite all right.
The first feature of the new engine is its greatly increased ratio of compression, represented by the formula 1 minus 1 over R to the power of gamma minus 1, where R represents the ratio of compression and gamma dimensions of cylinders diameter. This device renders the engine completely silent. The exhaust gases impinging on a series, entirely eliminating all sound. Am I right? Am I right, sir?
That's quite right, old chap.
Thank you, sir. I'm glad it's off my mind.
Memory. Mr. Memory.
Richard, what is it?
The Air Ministry secret will never leave England.
This way, please. We can pick up the police car on the corner.
The police car? Where are you taking us?
To Scotland Yard, of course.
Scotland Yard?
Yes, but you can't do that. You heard what that man said. He didn't tell anybody.
Easy now, easy. He'll be all right. All we want is to put the story on the record.
Oh.
Oh, that's better.
You've nothing to worry about at all. He'll be a free man in an hour, Mrs. Annie.
Annie? Well, what are you talking about?
Well, I... Oh,
Mrs. Annie.
Sorry. I thought...
That would be just fine, that would. We were together for one day, and we fought for 24 hours.
20? You were asleep 4 hours.
Can you imagine what it would be like? Fight for breakfast, fight for lunch, fight for dinner. One long, drawn-out battle for the next 30 or 40 years.
Oh, 30 or 40 years. Do you think we could keep it up that long? I mean, really.
Well, we could try.
Robert Montgomery and Ida Lupino have completed the 39 steps. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your announcer, Melville Ruick. In our cast tonight were Leonard Mudie as Professor Bartlett, Reginald Sheffield, Herbert Evans, and Keith Kenneth as detectives, Lionel Belmore as innkeeper, Vernon Steele as cart driver, Edgar Norton as manager of the music hall, Eric Wilton and Raymond Lawrence as Cockney travelers, Ward Lane as butler, Eric Snowden and Norman Ainsley as Scotchman, Sybil Harris as a rowdy, and Phyllis Coughlin as a woman. Louis Silvers appeared through courtesy of 20th Century Fox Studios, where he was in charge of music for the new picture, Love and Hisses. This is Cecil B. DeMille saying good night to you.
Project Independence, and you hope you enjoyed the ending of that thrilling 39 Steps, which I believe was on, there was a Broadway version either last year or the year before, Carol. And Carol, my co-host, has promised that by the next time she's on the show, she will have seen the movie version, that fabulous movie version, the Hitchcock classic with Robert Donat and Madeline Carroll. So that's good news, huh?
It is. I'm always interested in another great film that I missed.
Okay. Did you ever see My Man Godfrey?
Never.
Okay. Well, that's another great film, a kind of different genre, more of a comedy. My Man Godfrey, which we'll be starting next week, is a Depression-era comedy about a down-on-his-luck businessman who is really living on the skids and is rescued by the lovely socialite. Played in the film, I believe, by Carol Lombard. The radio play stars David Niven, and I think you're going to love it, and we will start it, as I said, next week. Carol, I have some announcements for the folks, and I hope you have your pencils and paper, because this is some important information for you coming up. Legislator Wayne Wink, who represents a large portion of the town of North Hempstead and the county legislature, has announced a local mammogram program sponsored with his office and the Nassau Healthcare Corporation. This is for uninsured women. And the mammogram van will be at the Albertson Fire Department parking lot on Wednesday, August 29th, from 8:40 a.m. until 12 noon. But appointments are required. To make an appointment, you can call 571-6211. That's 571-6211. Mammograms for uninsured women, Wednesday, August 29th in Albertson. As we've announced before, the local Lions Club has a wonderful program for people, again, who meet the financial requirements, the criteria. They can get a free hearing aid, and those can be expensive and not covered by insurance. So if you're interested to see if you would qualify for this program, you want to contact the Lions Club, and you can do that through, again, through Project Independence by calling 311 or 869-6311 and say you want information about the Lions Lend an Ear hearing program. Once again, we're calling all World War II and Korean War vets, and we'll be happy to talk with veterans of any era, but we're particularly interested in doing an oral history with World War II and Korean War vets so that we can interview you here on the show. If you can't get to the studio, we will come to your home or to any location that you want within the town to interview you for the oral history that will be archived in the LIU Post B. Davis Schwartz Library for researchers, family members, and for future generations to have access to these remarkable stories. Project Independence is putting together a group that they call Project for Fun, Carol, and this is strictly a social group, and we all need
them. We all need a little more fun in our lives. Right?
Absolutely. Again, 311 is the number to call for more information about that group. The voice is a little raspy today. There must be pollen in the air. Do you know about our CarFit program?
I read something about that in the transportation guide.
Yes.
And I was very interested to get more information.
Yes. You know, as we get older, it's important to make sure that we're still comfortable and safe behind the wheel, that our car actually fits us.
And
because there are some changes that occur.
The concept is so creative and unusual. And it's what I hear my friends talking about. They're not comfortable driving. They don't know.
Yeah. Are the mirrors in the right place? Right. Is the seatbelt in the right place? Are you sitting in the right place vis-a-vis the wheel, where the wheel is? So we can check all that for you, because Project Independence, through our New Freedom Grant, has a mobility manager who has become certified in the CarFit program. So if you call us at 311, Claudia Puglianich, who's our mobility manager, will either come to you or you can bring your car to our office. And this is a program that we do in conjunction with AARP, the American Occupational Therapy Association, and AAA. So if you're interested in the CarFit program, again, you can call 311.
And I see you have what looks like an informative brochure in your hand.
Yes.
Is that something our listeners could find if they go to the resource room, for example?
Funny you should mention the resource room, Carol, of course. That and other wonderful information is available in the resource room at the DOSA headquarters, Department of Services for the Aging, Project Independence headquarters at 470 Old Country Road in Roslyn Heights. And again, everything, all this information is available through the 311 consumer response phone line. We have our new schedule for the summer of 2012 with the St. Francis Hospital outreach van. Free health screenings, including a brief cardiac history, blood pressure check, blood tests for cholesterol, and diabetes screenings with appropriate patient information and referrals as needed, working with St. Francis Hospital, another great hospital in our town. And the van is going to be throughout the town of North Hempstead during June and July. Going to be at the Great Neck Senior Center on June 27th, the Port Washington Senior Center on the 28th, Friendship Baptist Church in Roslyn Heights on July 5th, Clinton Martin Park in New Hyde Park on July 10th, the Westbury Senior Center on the 11th of July, Sid Jacobs and JCC in East Hills on July 17th, and Manhasset Valley Residence on July 19th. But you can visit the van from anywhere in the town of North Hempstead on any of these dates. Call 311 or 869-6311 for more information.
Did you say that's open to everyone or the uninsured?
No, this is open to everyone.
Okay.
If you're a Project Independence member, 60 or over, and a resident of the town. Project Independence is also starting a new program on retirement. It's called A New Beginning, Making Retirement Work for You. If you're planning to retire or you're retired and want some information about how to make the most of your retirement years, then you want to be a member of this group. And again, you can call 311 to join. If memory and aging is an issue that interests you, then you want to attend on Monday, July 16th at the Great Neck Senior Center at 10:30 in the morning, a program being given by Erica Kristen, who is a nurse at the Harvey Cushing Institute of Neuroscience at North Shore LIJ, another one of our great hospitals. We're very fortunate in the town to have such amazing medical services. I apologize again for the voice. We are going to be taking a break in a minute. We do want you to stay tuned, though, because we have a really interesting interview with one of our veterans, John DeVanzo, who was actually, Carol, part of the Normandy invasion.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
He's 90 years old. He's a resident of Mineola. He's a member of one of our Project Independence advisory committees. And by the way, if you're interested in being on one of our advisory committees, we now have six committees that meet on a monthly basis all around the town. And what they do is they let us know about the concerns of seniors in their community. So we have a committee that meets in Great Neck, one that meets in Port Washington, another in New Hyde Park, one in Mineola, one in Roslyn, and we welcome seniors throughout the town to join those committees. And you can do that again by calling 311 or 869-6311. The folk, they're very active. They're very, of course, you know, it's the people who are involved in everything that join these groups, and they know what's going on.
Sure.
So they tell us what the needs are. Project Independence tries to design programs and services to meet those needs. And then the most important thing they do is they tell us, as Ed Koch used to say, how we're doing. Right?
I'm sure they do.
They certainly do. And they're not shy. And if they don't think we're doing well, they let us know. And
that's important, because that way the program can be responsive, not just at one point in time, but as you go along.
Absolutely. And that really is one of the most important legs upon which programs like Project Independence rest, because we really need to get the input from the people we're being served. We're not in business to tell you what you need.
Mm-hmm.
We're in business to listen, to learn about what you think you need. And then
I think today seniors don't want to listen anyway. You know, we all got the idea of expressing ourselves.
Well, we want to hear what you have to say. So that's it. Carol, I want to thank you again for being with us today. Again, folks, stay tuned.
It's really been a pleasure.
For the John DeVanzo interview. This is Evelyn Roth for Project Independence. Thank you. Welcome back to Project Independence and You. This is Evelyn Roth, your host, and in this next segment, we're going to be interviewing John DeVanzo of Mineola, and John is taking part in our oral history project. And as you know, we have been interviewing veterans of World War II and the Korean War era, and really we're interested in talking to veterans of any time for this project, where we're excuse me, folks, partnering with WCWP 88.1 radio to establish an oral history, which is going to be available at the LIU Post B. Davis Schwartz Library for use by students, historians, and the public. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to get all these stories on tape and in the archives. Well, we can. And John, it's a pleasure to be here with you today.
Nice to meet you.
You are a resident of Mineola, and I imagine a long time.
I'm a lifetime resident of Mineola.
A lifetime resident of Mineola.
90 years.
How many?
90.
90 years. Okay. I wasn't going to ask. But
that's all right.
But it's certainly something to be proud of. John, first tell us a little bit about your background, when and where you were born. Of course, you said Mineola.
Yeah.
About your family. And
I was born in Mineola and went through the Mineola school system. I had four sisters and three brothers. two brothers and myself, of course. And we lived in a, what they call a cold water flat, you know, just four, a railroad flat, just four rooms, only a stove and a kitchen for heat. And we had to go outdoors for the other things. So, you know, it goes back a ways.
Right,
yes.
Right.
And my parents, of course, came from Italy, and my father was in the construction business. And locally, and there was a lot of road building and a lot of construction going on, and he was in charge of a lot of that. So I went to the Mineola High School. After high school, I went to Hofstra. I went to Hofstra when it was only three buildings there, and I actually had a scholarship there because I was all scholastic in high school. I had four letters. I had football, football, baseball, basketball, and track. So I went to Hofstra. For a short time, because money ran out. I mean, it was a scholarship type thing, and money ran out. And then I got a job in a defense factory, building transmitters for the Navy and the Army.
Where was that?
That was out in Hicksville. It was called Press Wireless. Was the name of the company? And we built for the services. And I was there for a while, and I was deferred because of the type of work I was doing. Building transmitters for the armed services. So then I was actually drafted into the Navy, and I, at that point in time, I had no choice as far as where that was going to go. So I went into the Navy, and
what year was this? Or how
1943. And when I got into the Navy, they sent me to radio school. Of course, I had some background in transmitters and so on, and I became a radio man. I went to Elkton, Maryland for that service. When I first went in, I went to boot camp up in Sampson, New York, where we learned training. We learned how to use rifles. We learned how to, you know, how to fold our clothing, how to make our beds. It was a new experience. Of course, a haircut and everything else that goes with it.
You didn't have to make your bed before then, huh, Mom?
Well, no. I slept wherever they could sleep, you know. So anyway, it was quite an experience. So after I finished boot camp, they sent me to a radio school in Elkton, Maryland, where I we had Morse code in those days, you know, and type the messages. And I became a radio man, and I graduated from there, and they sent me to New York to Brooklyn Navy Yard, where I picked up my ship, which was a destroyer.
You were about 20, 21, 22
yes.
at the time?
Yes, I was just a youngster, I guess you call it.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
And do you remember the name of the ship?
Yes, the name of the ship was the USS Glennon, G-L-E-N-N-O-N.
Glennon, uh-huh.
Number 620. I boarded the ship in Brooklyn early in 43, I guess it was, I didn't know where we were going to go or what we were doing. Nobody told us, of course, and I was new, and I wasn't even assigned a bunk on a ship.
You weren't assigned a bunk.
No, I had
so
no
where
bunk.
Did you sleep?
I don't know. I just went to somebody else's bunk,
like
I guess.
Like a hammock?
Lots of,
so
yeah, they were bunks. They weren't hammocks, but they were bunks.
Yeah.
But I used to, you know, find an empty one and get into it.
I guess you were a relatively low rank at the time.
Well, I was just a seaman. You
a
know,
seaman, okay.
A seaman. And unfortunately, a few days out to sea, I developed appendicitis.
Oh.
And I had to have an appendicitis
operation.
So
On the ship,
in the mess hall, you know, on the ship, the mess hall was the meeting place for everybody. You had your breakfast, your lunch, your dinner, the movies
and your
at
surgery.
Night. So they put me on this mess hall table and gave me a needle or something. It didn't work, I mean, because I could feel it. So they put me out. So I had the operation, and when I had the operation, I stayed in the mess hall, and they had a bunk in there, and that's where I was, you know, going across the ocean. And everybody came down, and they had their breakfast, and they had their lunch, and they had their shows, and there I was, you know, with my
convalescent,
with my operation.
Yeah.
So finally, I really don't know how many days it was, but I was transferred from my ship to the battleship Texas, which was stationed there. I think it was somewhere in Ireland, someplace. I'm not even sure.
Hi there, welcome back to Project Independence and You. This is Evelyn Roth, your host. We were talking with World War II vet John DeVanzo here at the Mineola Village Hall, where he is a volunteer. And we were interrupted by a fire alarm and sirens, so we had to break up the interview a little bit early. And now we're back. I think everything's under control. Right, John?
Right.
The engines went out.
The engines went out.
And we've got
I missed
some,
the fire call, you know.
We've got some quiet.
I don't get to sign up for it.
So we were with you, I think, you were on your ship, the Glennon, when you had an appendicitis attack and you had to have emergency surgery there on the ship. And they transferred you for recuperation to the Texas.
Right.
And then back. You got back to your ship. So let's pick up your story there.
All right, so we got back to my ship. And again, we didn't know what was going on. And it was, I guess it was June 6th when the Navy and Army started the invasion. And we were all part of it. And my ship sailed along with the rest of the ships. And we were about 2,000 yards from the beach.
And you had no idea that this was...
I had no idea where we were going, you know.
Yeah.
Because of my operation and my short term, you know, in the Navy, really. But anyway, we suddenly hit a mine. I was a radio man, so my shift was going to be from 8 to 12. So I went up on the bridge.
It was 8 in the morning?
8 in the morning. Uh-huh. I went up on the bridge to do my share, do my my segment. And no sooner got up there, and we hit a mine and cut the ship in half. Half of the ship was in the ocean. We were that close. We had some ships come up and try to tow us out, and they also hit mines. Mm-hmm. And the worst part of it was that we couldn't go anywhere because we were at the bottom of the ocean pretty much. You know, we were pretty close to the beach. And they could see us, and they were firing, and they could dropping shells on either side of us trying to hit us. And I was a radio man, and I had to... I was lucky to be where I was at the time. And I had,
where were you, John?
I was up on what they call the bridge, which was, you know, above.
Okay, so you were
everybody.
Still on the ship.
Yeah, everybody else that came off the ship, they were down, the hatches were locked, and they were gone.
Huh.
And so I was part of taking, you know, destroying most of the records radio-wise so that there wouldn't be anything there that they could take. And we had, as I say, we had other ships coming up, trying to get us off. And finally, we did get off. I got onto I forget the name of the ship, but anyway, I was there with just my clothes on my back. I didn't have anything because everything was below where everybody died. And somehow or another, they took me to Roseneath, Ireland. They outfitted me in a British uniform, Army uniform, and I was there for quite a little bit of time, and finally got a survivor's leave of 30 days.
Survivor's leave?
as a survivor.
Right. So you really never reached the beach.
Well, we were close enough to the beach. We could see the landings. We could see, you know, people going in and out of the aircraft. And
you were under fire the whole time.
We were under fire the whole time.
So the boat that picked you, the ship that picked you up.
It was an LST, what they call an LST.
Yes.
An LST. And brought us to I guess it was an army post. And I got
at Normandy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is now taking us into July. And from there, they transferred me back to the States. I came back on a Queen Elizabeth, on a Queen Mary at the time. I'm not sure which one it was. For a 30-day leave.
Right.
And I got home around July 4th. So this all happened between May and July, whenever the invasion. And I got home, and first thing I did was I called up my wife. She was not my wife, but my high school sweetheart. We were engaged. I said, I'm home. We're going to get married. So that's what happened. I got home and we made arrangements to get married. I was married on the 22nd of July. And then I had orders to go back. And I went back, and then they put me on a sub chase, and I was going back and forth to Cuba. And finally, they put me ashore, and I was in the Thagla Hotel, and the Navy had a radio station there.
Now, this was where, ashore?
Pardon?
They put you ashore where?
In Miami.
In Miami, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I was in a radio, what they call a radio shack, in Thagla Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was living ashore. You know, I was living in one of the hotels that they occupied down there. And at that point in time, I started looking for an apartment to bring my wife down, because we were just married. And so I did find an apartment. It was a two-car garage, converted to two apartments. And she came down, and we actually spent the rest of our time in Miami. My firstborn son was born in Miami. Mm. I was married in July 22nd, and he was born August 5th in Miami.
Okay,
so he's
a
Miami cracker, a Florida cracker.
Uh-huh.
And when we left there, I came home with a child, a small child, in October of that year.
This is when you 44. Were discharged?
Yes,
or?
I was discharged.
So how long had you spent in the service?
I was there from 1943 till 46.
Till 46.
I actually went into the Navy in 1943.
Right.
I was discharged in January 1946.
So this period that you spent, I think you said sub-chasing?
Yeah, I was going back and forth to Cuba for whatever reason. Maybe looking for submarines, I don't know.
Oh, is that what they were
doing? But that
was
a short stay. I mean,
did you ever actually find one, submarine?
No, because it was a short trip from, from Miami to Cuba.
Right.
And it was just a, just a surveillance thing, I guess,
Yeah.
But I didn't have time enough to even make friends on a ship or anything else. And the same when I was on my ship, the Glennon. I never really got to know too many of the sailors. So it was quite an experience. And when I got out of the Navy, and then when I was discharged, we came home and lived with my relatives for a while, and then went back to work. I mean, back in those days, they had us send us, when we got out of service, we had to get a job back where we left. So I went back to work, and worked there for a few years. My brothers and I started a business in Mineola, started a moving business, and we had an fuel oil business and gasoline station, and we were living on those with those
incomes from those businesses. Yeah. John, speaking of your brothers, did your brothers or anyone else in your family enter the service?
My younger brother was in the service, yes.
And what branch was he in?
He was in Navy also. He was in the Pacific.
Ah, okay.
And then I, you know, I, when I got home, I got interested in local activities, and I joined the fire department. I was in the VFW, the American Legion, and I got involved with the village, and I became a trustee in the village of Mineola for 10 years. And after that, I became the councilman in the town of North Hempstead for 10 years, and then I became the town clerk for 17 years, so I was an elected official for over 37 years at that point in time. And 4 years ago, Mayor Martins approached me, and he was looking for somebody to run for an office in the village again as trustee, and he wanted me to, you know, give him some names, and I gave him a lot of names, and he said, well, I have somebody in mind. I said, well, you're the mayor. And I said, you know. So he said, well, he points to me. He said, I want you. I said, Jack, I want you. I didn't have a chance to say no. So I'm back on a village board.
Okay.
And from there, I mean, that's pretty much a whole span of a lot of things that happened.
That's the history and mystery and mastery of John DeVanzo.
Pretty much. I mean, there's a lot of history there, and we skipped a lot of stuff. But.
Yeah. I'd like to ask you about your time in the service, which of course was a unique experience for
a very short time,
but it must have had an impact on your life way beyond that short period that you spent there.
Some of the things you can't believe. I mean, the things that happened so quickly between May and July, you know, the operation, the invasion, the ship sinking, it was a lot.
And how do you think it impacted you in what you did when you came home and how you've led your life since then?
Well, I think I more or less, you know, I had 5 children, and I had 4 grandchildren, 4 great-grandchildren, and I was pretty much involved in local charities, local organizations, Knights of Columbus.
So did your time there give you the sense that you wanted to give back to the country?
Well, I think I gave a lot back.
Yeah, no, you certainly have.
And, and it's just something I enjoy. I enjoy people, and I hardly say no to anybody.
The other veterans we've talked to, when we ask about the impact of those years or what was the most significant thing that they feel happened, most of them talk about the exposure to other people from all over the country and all over the world.
Yes, well, of course, that's true, but what we talked about was a short period from May to July.
Yeah.
So we didn't have an opportunity, really, to, you know.
But on the ship, I guess you said you really didn't get to know a lot of your shipmates.
No,
well, but there must have been young men from all over the country.
Yeah, I'm sure, sure.
And certainly having escaped with your life in that situation.
I could have been a few minutes later, or right. Earlier, I could have been below, you know, with the rest of them. So, but, you know, there are other things in my lifetime that, that are...
Do you talk with your children about your war experiences, and have any of them been in the service?
No. My son was, he went to Bucknell University, and he was in reserves, Army reserves, But otherwise, we didn't.
Okay, is there anything else you want to tell all the people who are going to be listening to this interview in the years to come about your experience?
I love people, and I think I learned a lot. I think I know what it is to be respectful and to be charitable and to be honest.
I think that's wonderful advice, and obviously something that you've lived by your entire life. John, I thank you so much for taking the time. to share your story with us.
Thank you very much. It's very nice meeting you.
And our producer, Christina Fennell.
Yeah.
This is Evelyn Roth for Project Independence and You. We've been talking with John DeVanzo, who is a Mineola resident, a lifelong Mineola resident, is currently once again serving on the village board since coming back from World War II. He's devoted his life to public service, and we certainly all appreciate that. Stay tuned to Project Independence and You. We will be right back.
This summer, we are heating things up on Total Access. Exclusive contests and interviews, plus all your favorite songs to keep you singing along. Here's my number, so call me maybe. New hits before you can hear them anywhere else. Your old favorites and the songs that just scream summer. This summer, keep it locked here. 88.1 FM and WCWP.org.
Sharper Training Solutions presents a hands-on lecture and demo class on how to create an email address designed for adults who have taken computer kindergarten in first grade or who have equivalent computer knowledge. This class takes place on Tuesday, July 10th at 10 a.m. at the Plainview Old Bethpage Public Library. The cost is $5 per person and registration is currently open. For more information, call 516-938-0077. The community calendar is a public service from your friends at 88.1 FM and WCWP.org.
Hi there. This is Evelyn Roth for Project Independence and You. That was quite a remarkable story that we heard from Mr. DeVanzo. Next week we will. Next week we will have another interview with a World War II vet who also had quite a harrowing experience as a Navy pilot in the South Pacific. His name is Walter Hobbs, also from Mineola. We'll be talking as well with his wife, who was a veteran herself. We'll have the first installment of the Lux Radio Theater presentation of My Man Godfrey, and we'll be talking about substance abuse as it affects grandparents and the elderly. We hope you will tune in next week. Until then, I would like to thank our guests. I want to thank the staff here at WCWP 88.1 FM, our producers, and all the folks at Project Independence. Have a fabulous week, and we'll be talking with you next week.